This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Yes, we are live. It is Thursday, which means only one day to the weekend.
And oh,
it feels like we just started this. Oh, you know what,
because
we did.
We just did start the week.
Public holidays, we love them.
Today's fake Wednesday.
Fake Wednesday, real Thursday, and tomorrow is Friday. Doesn't matter what you want to call it, it's going to be Friday. There's no fake Friday.
No.
Nobody cares about that. I take it as it is.
Yeah, we're all just happy to see that sucker.
Yes.
It's Booza Thursday.
That's right. Oh, I'm doing something I haven't done in, 5 years today. Ooh. I'm going on radio. I've been asked to join the guy who gave me a job in radio. What was it? Let's just say a lot.
Carry the one minus the four.
I can't add.
Yeah, but
years ago, Rian van Heerden, he's on Jacaranda. Oh. He's invited me back to, not back. I've never been on there. To talk. I don't know what he wants to talk about. And I said, you know what? We've got some podcasts to plug. I'm happy to come.
Sure.
So I'm going to go and see him, see what we can get up to.
He's in the afternoon.
Afternoon, correct.
He's in the afternoon.
Well, he better be, because if he's on now, then I'm not coming.
And is it going to be like, are you going to be broadcasting in your tweetalige?
I don't know. I don't even know if they do that anymore. You know, I haven't ever listened to, I know this sounds horrible, but I don't listen to much radio anymore. And I haven't listened to Rian since he's been on in the afternoon. I don't know what their format is, because you see radio stations have license conditions. Pumi, you know this. They have license conditions and format restrictions. So, for example, if you are a radio station that has applied for a commercial music license,
mm-hmm.
then you have to say, okay, fine, we're going to play 80% of what we do is music, and 20% of it's going to be talk. And then what they do is they crook the schedule so that your morning and afternoon shows, which need a lot of talk in them, because otherwise how do you sell advertising, those ones you wait against the daytime and the nighttime shows where you just have some idiot sitting there playing music and saying the station name.
Oh, bunt.
No, and they get paid minimum wage. They're useless people. Among the least respectable people in broadcasting.
Hey, you know, and then you get trying to make a living.
And you get a talk station, and that means you don't you have to then do talk formatted material all day. But if you are given a license to do it in isiZulu, I mean, this is how these apartheid rules still spill over into our world. And then you've got to speak Zulu.
And you can't code switch.
Uh-huh, correct.
You can't have Ukhozi.
On Ukhozi, you can't suddenly go into like a diatribe in like 15 minutes of talk in Xhosa. You're going to get fired.
And it can't be Zinglish.
No, it can't.
Can't be Irmut.
Not on Ukhozi. They won't listen to you. On Ukhozi, those gogos will call up the station and complain.
La le la la.
Guys. Yeah, it just doesn't work around like that.
Exactly.
But God bless talk hosts.
Why?
Who have to work at night.
Oh, it's
at 3
horrible.
In the morning.
Or 3 in the morning.
So look, when I started, I had to
what
do that.
What do you have to talk about?
I used to take calls from suicides.
You see?
I used to, I would do anything I could, because at that time in the morning, you're desperate for ratings. So you'll do anything.
Mm.
You'll be outrageous and shocking, and you'll do parody songs, and you'll do fake commercials, and you'll talk to anybody. By the way, anyone who calls in, you'll take a call.
But you know who was very, very, very popular and had that kind of midnight? This is Shadow.
Shadow Twala. Yeah.
Yeah, and she used to have this. Feature called, and I was little man, but she it was huge, this feature, talking about you'll talk to anybody. She used to have this feature called Shell Goes Trucking.
Yeah.
And she used to talk to truck drivers who would
clever.
Be at like at a truck stop or whatever,
right, yeah.
And they'd phone in, and hugely popular. If you ever wondered
especially among
how
truckers.
She got into that, how she got that Got Talent, and she also, I mean, they were in the first group of people that became speaking about code switching in Metro days, when became the first black urban station that outside of the, in the apartheid era, you know, that kind of was broadcasting English and, you know?
Yeah, they could actually get away with some
radio
stuff.
Days.
I'm glad for their sake and for my own that I grew out of this stage. My friends and I used to always, when we've been out and we've been drinking and now on our way home at like 2 a.m, it's always like, find that radio station's number, let's call them. Because you know, that tall coast is all on their own and they're just glad to see the lines beep up. And so they'll answer that
phone
call.
They'll be so happy. Yeah. And then you get on the air and then you swear and you carry on. And then they go, I'm sorry about that call. We have to cut them off.
No.
It was so stupid of us. Like, we want to talk about the economy in Greece. And you can tell. It's stupid. So shame.
You want to listen to some emails before we get going with our morning?
Yeah.
All right. So, first things first. Elaine sent this to me. She said, I assumed for years that my folks had a funeral policy. I discovered to my horror that they didn't, and I immediately helped my mom take out a policy. She was the easiest one to get covered quickly. My dad was a bit of a challenge because he was older. And my mom passed away very suddenly 4 months ago, and we had to arrange her funeral knowing the policy would pay out, perhaps, because there was a waiting period for new policies. Is that how it works? I arranged the best I could for the cheapest I could without skimping. That came to 22,000 rand. Good Lord. Is that what it costs to put someone in the ground?
Hey, when? Yeah?
So when I saw Elaine's, and I then thought, oh, Elaine, couldn't she like have a name that gives us a little bit more about who she is and where she's from? Because I was like, 22,000 rand, Elaine? Because, you know, black funerals in the hood. There are buses involved.
Yeah, it's big. It's
22,000 is actually not a lot.
22,000. I'm just like, I was like, hey, well done, Elaine. Well done.
But, you know, 22, then that's one of those cultural things we need to do something to change. Because if young families are going to go into debt burying old people, and then their kids can't go to school or varsity, or they can't afford the groceries, or they can't afford the petrol, or they can't afford the taxi money because they've had to put someone in the ground. That's kind of that's one of those customs got to change.
Yeah, it was actually.
It doesn't make sense.
One of the serious conversations.
Just burn them up and put them in a hole. I mean, really. And like, I don't want any fancy fuss with me. I've said this before.
Yeah.
Throw me in the hole.
It was one of the serious conversations I'm glad my older siblings had with my parents when they started working.
Yeah.
Because my parents, to a certain extent, still think very traditionally. It's like, no, you have to have this and you have to have that and you have to be covered like this. And my sister said, oh, but hold up. My mother has a cover, then she has a family funeral cover, then my dad has his cover, then he has a family funeral cover.
They went the full hog.
Full Monty with everyone. Good. Then they wanted, when my sister started working, then my sister needs to have her own cover, and then she needs to cross-cover everyone. And it's like, wait, guys, what are we exactly doing here?
Right.
And where's this money going? And we understand that it's still it's still part of customs or tradition, but it's also excessive in some instances, and you can pull back with some costs.
So some years ago, I was working with a client, and this is where I got to learn a lot about the funeral industry. And, and I've got friends who've actually got funeral parlors. And
hey, big business.
You.
Big business.
But what I found so fascinating is when all of this became a way of being. So, you know, we're like, is it customary? Is it traditional? It actually also, speaking about apartheid era legacies, that's when it also all became the way that it was.
What's the root of it?
That's where the root of it is. Because in apartheid South Africa, first of all, there were two things that happened to a lot of black people is migrant labor. Mm-hmm. And what migrant labor made sure happens is people lived very far away from where they are from. And so this waiting a week before you could bury someone is because people couldn't get off. People couldn't get the time off to go and bury their people. So then you waited a week, sometimes even 2 weeks before your father or your mother or your grandmother or those important people in the family
could make it there.
So now you had storage costs for your person, right?
Yeah, right.
And then
you gotta put them in a fridge.
And then all of the additional stuff around the waiting period. Now people are traveling long distances, so the feeding of those people has become a thing. Now you know, and where people used to be able to
become like a hotel without a bill
in family plots. So people used to bury in family plots, right? But now, you know,
cemeteries.
The cemetery is over there, far away, and now you've got 20 people are here. Now you have to transport everybody there because they don't have their own cars, and then the bus.
Right.
System came.
So then,
so all of those things got piled up.
All the more reason why all this stuff should be abandoned.
Exactly. And over time.
And now they've got people on TV selling black families these funeral policies, which it's basically like, it's criminal.
It's absolutely criminal.
So Elaine, you're not the only one who thinks this is outrageous. And listen, according to Pumi, you got off like easy.
Very lightly. Well done.
Funerals
to you.
Are expensive, she says. We didn't go overboard, just did the best we could. We have since then sorted out a policy for my dad. Moral of the story, make sure you're covered for at least 20 grand to cover most of the expenses. Casket was 5,000 rand. She says, my mom was a big lady. So if you're bigger.
Yeah, in a rise per size.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in a rise per size. You don't just, Jay.
So you have to pay more if you're a big person in a casket?
Mm-hmm.
Really? So you need a big casket, obviously.
Exactly.
You can't just put you in the fire?
But I was surprised to find
The fat person in the fire will burn a lot better than a thin person because there's a lot more fat to burn. And fat, we know. Have you ever cooked a lamb chop?
Are you about to die? This is Boomy that cough.
Right? I mean, Elaine, how fat was your... I'm interested.
Now you got us thinking.
Sizzle and pop.
But it's even the rental fee for casket is quite pricey.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's where they put you in the casket, but then they quickly transfer you right at the end.
Well, what we did with my grandfather is we had to essentially rent a casket for a day because he wanted to be cremated. But for the service, you can't just have the corpse sitting on a chair. So you needed to put the car.
Wouldn't that be funny if you put him sitting in a chair?
No, you can't have that. You know, so we had
to rent it
in a casket. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Had to like rent it for a day and a half or something. Hey,
yeah, you see,
funerals.
I don't have, and then there's also the religious element to it, which is very confusing to me because, look, I understand people want like last rites performed over them in case they, you know, they don't get into the afterlife. That I get. Like for me, that's another thing you can cut costs on. So here's my bargain basement funeral. Right, let's start the morning with something morbid like this. So first thing first, put me in the cheapest box you can, then burn me up so that I take up even less space. Gather up all those little bits and pieces, the ash and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in another little box. It could be wood. I don't care. It doesn't have to be anything fancy like marble or, you know, gold or any of that shit. Because you see people spend money on that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Just a wooden box.
Have you not seen? There's actually a show. There's an American TV show, reality show about funerals and funeral parlors.
Oh, my God.
I'm not surprised.
I'm sure it's brilliant, though. And then you don't have to have anyone perform any. So gather the family up. Anyone else who wants to come, I suppose, because, you know, you don't invite people to a funeral. People come.
Mm.
And then they must all just gather around, and anyone who wants to say something nice can say something nice. Anyone who wants to say something shit can say that too. Because the one thing that bothers me about funerals is everybody says such nice things. The worst person in the family dies, and everybody gets together and goes, oh, he was so great. Meanwhile, he's a child molester, and he's a thief. And
There was never a dull day.
Yeah, he was always such an inspiring person. And you're like, is that why no one visited him for the last 10 years of his life? Because he was so inspiring. Guy was rotting away in like his apartment or in an old age home or out in the middle of nowhere for years. No one cared.
Oh, wait, this is important. Where is this ceremony of yours taking place?
Well, we've got a family plot, a graveyard out near the Hartebeespoort Dam too. And the rest of the family are all buried there. So just put me right where they are.
So no rental fees.
My thing that I don't want.
Booking a venue.
The one thing that I'm clear, I don't want.
Don't feed these fuckers either. Do not feed these people who come to my funeral. I don't want them to be happy and feel satisfied. I want them to be miserable about me being not there anymore.
Oh. What if we just give them like tomato sandwiches?
Nothing. Zero.
Cucumber sandwiches.
They must leave there. They must leave there sad, hungry, and tired.
Oh. So for you, it's like a 30-minute
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. Festival. What if a lot of people want to talk? Maybe they've all got terrible stories about me.
People allowed to have, yeah. You see, Gareth.
And then just put my name, date of birth, date of death. Boom.
I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Gareth.
Put a rock on top of me or something.
I'm sorry to have to tell you this, my friend.
What?
But actually, funerals are not about the person who has
died. I know. That's the problem, right? It's all the people who are left, and they decide, and they change the rules. Because you're not allowed, in the law, you're not allowed to rule from the grave.
Yeah.
So I actually can't force anybody to do this for me. Look, if you're lucky, someone will care enough to actually bury you.
Yeah, I'm
you know
sorry.
How many unclaimed, this is a scary statistic. We talk about how we respect the dead and all that stuff. South Africa has thousands of unclaimed corpses every year.
For people who get pauper's funerals.
Yeah, and then, but some of them are not necessarily poor people. The family are just estranged. There's something going on. And they die, and then they go to the morgue, and then they say, can someone identify the body? And no one comes.
Lord, I can't believe this is the conversation has deteriorated to this.
Oh. We're all wearing black today. We're ready for a funeral.
Listen, this stuff's interesting. Because people don't talk about this. They're embarrassed and they're shy, right?
But you know what I do? I tell this. Here's the thing. The only way that you can ensure to some extent that things go the way you want them to go at your funeral is you must tell as many people as you can about the things that you do want, so that people then can let them fight it out, right? They'll be
write it down.
But if you tell as many people, then when they have those meetings, you know, that little meeting after
someone's
everybody
passed
now
away.
Knows,
yeah.
When they have that meeting, they can have that conversation that says, yeah, that's the thing. So people will be like, but you never wanted that.
Yeah.
Let's not do that.
What do you want, Pumi? I'm interested. I'm curious. Have you ever thought about this?
Yes, people mustn't come to my graveside.
What do you mean?
Only whoever. Like Kanego and whoever. But
only the close family. You don't want
want a busload of people coming to my graveside.
Oh.
Why do they have to be there? They don't know. They're never going to come there ever again,
When someone dies in those superhero movies, they always show all these people gathered around the actual grave. You don't want that.
If they must, they can have a memorial. And again, if people wanted to make me happy, what they should have...
We're going
to
record this for posterity, right?
...is they should have a party.
There we go. Now
have a proper party. Have a party. Because, right? What do I like?
Party.
What are the things that I like in life?
You want miserable, somber people standing around saying
things.
Have
a party.
Okay, good. I changed my mind as well. Just scratch my previous plans.
Have a party, yo.
There we go. Yeah.
Imagine, so if they spend, you spend the 5,000 on the casket, like Elaine's mom here, and spend that other 20K, get a nice cake.
There we go.
Get a DJ.
Some drinks.
Get some, gin and tonics.
Maybe get some shrooms.
Oh, that escalated very quickly.
Gin teas, baby, gin teas.
Get everybody on shrooms.
I'm sorry, as someone who has...
See, I want everybody to come and be like...
as someone who grew up with a mother who was obsessed with the royals, and that's how the obsession passed on to me.
And your dad's a preacher.
Yeah, one of the first events I remember watching over and over and over as a kid, because my mother taped it on VHS.
Wow.
Was Lady Diana's funeral.
Wow.
You watched that over and over
again? It's kind of sick, but yeah, my mother and I would just sit and watch that. So
do you want one like that?
Oh, I need the whole enchilada. And it was reinforced when my grand passed away. I was 5, so it was the early 2000s. And my dad had friends with the Metro Police in Durban.
Yes.
And they were like, we love your grandmother so much. We are going to give her some way of a salute that we can. So the Metro Police actually ushered the entire funeral party to and from the church service and to and from the graveyard. So we have 6 Metro cops driving us.
So you felt very important.
There's this entourage going, I'm like, this is the Lord.
I love it.
I need a whole
love it.
I need a whole week's celebration.
How weak.
Just put down 100K when I'm dead.
Yo, you better save, man.
You better put down that 100K. You better put it down.
Otherwise, your wishes are not going to be
all of these funeral covers at home.
Because that's what happens. You know, you have the family meeting, right? And then everybody's got like, oh, we should do this. Nah, 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 nah. And you're just like, yeah.
How?
That suggestion of yours, does it come with 10,000 rand to cover your suggestion?
If you don't have that money.
No, it doesn't.
Thank you. Back of the
queue. Take several seats.
Here's another email. This one is much less morbid and depressing. This one is, listening to your show from Wednesday the 19th of June with Dave as a guest. That's yesterday. Loving it. He's a bit like Gord, what with interrupting at every given moment. My first friend I made in Durban is a Zulu lady. We often have conversations with regard to race and politics. We don't agree on all points, but one thing we agree on is that we both feel South African. We should reclassify the whole black, white, colored thing to a new system. Now, this is the suggestion that whoever this is, I can't find her name, has made. She says, a classification...
Shannon.
Is it Shannon? No, Shannon's the next one, isn't
Suzette.
It?
Suzette.
Oh, Suzette. Thank you, Sia. All right. Suzette says, let's start a classification of 1 to 5, where 1 would be for white South Africans that burn red in the sun and people with albinism, and then we got a 5 where a person is of a naturally dark skin color, and the rest in the middle. I'm not white, I'm pink, but I'd fall into the 1 category. Fuck racists.
Oh.
She says, I'm all for chemical castration of sex offenders, because we discussed that yesterday, Pumi. I wore a t-shirt in my student days with a slogan, castrate rapists have a ball. Absolutely bring Kaya in for the burning platform for as long as you can afford him. He's extremely knowledgeable and a treat to listen to, as is Canthan and Pumi. That's very nice.
Ooh.
Keep it up and do not stop streaming live from 6 a.m. I wake up at 4:30 a.m. whether I want to or not, so suck it up, motherfuckers. That's from Suzette in Durban.
4:30.
Yeah. Suzette, your suggestion of a classification system is terrible, but everything else in that email is great, so thank you. All right.
It is very nice.
All right. Do you want to get
but
some
4:30,
news?
4:30, guys.
Yeah, that's
4:30 sounds a little excessive.
Cringe a bit.
Mind you, that's when we wake up.
Yeah, but we have to.
Yeah, I suppose you better have a good excuse for that, Suzette. All right, 5 things you need to know this morning. You ready?
Yeah, bro.
All right, first of all, FNB has clarified what happened with numerous customers' accounts when unknown amounts of money were deposited into them from seemingly nowhere.
Did anyone get this?
I wish.
I saw people talking about it and people who had received it. But my favorite thing is that when they reversed it, I think they charged them reversal fees.
No.
Oh, God, no. That's horrible.
That's what people were tweeting last night.
Oh, this is a nightmare for them.
Basically, people were saying, why is FNB giving us free money? Anyone receiving free money from FNB? My balance confused me this morning. If you're with FNB, check your accounts right now. Thank me later. Who hacked FNB and gave me all this money?
Mm.
So the bank went on to explain what had happened. We can confirm that the issue of incorrect balances in some of our customers' transactional accounts have been resolved. The incorrect balances were due to delayed debit card transactions for purchases. Sincere apologies to the impacted customers for the inconvenience caused. Naturally, people were not very happy because FNB reversed the amounts, and in some cases they charged, as Pumi said, reversal fees, according to the customers. Now, look, if you make the mistake, you can't charge people.
Why am I paying for your mistake?
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You can't charge people reversal fees for that. Your screw-up, you should have to leave that money in the...
Yeah, exactly. Finders keepers.
Right. Exactly. Damn it. What's wrong with people?
I also saw some people... I would be so frustrated.
Wait, are you horrified?
I also saw some people complaining about the fact that, you know, they got this money. Whether or not it was right of them to spend it is a different story.
Yeah.
But they spent it regardless. And they were then contacted by the bank to say, actually, you have to go to that place. Get that money back. Then we'll just take it out of your account.
Please.
The same way same place we put it in. That's all we're dealing with.
Oh,
we aren't dealing with any transactions that
Imagine someone who didn't have anything in their account. Then suddenly they got 5,000. They go and spend it immediately.
Oh.
Then they're less than zero. Now they're 5,000 rand in the hole.
Mm.
That can be life altering. Like, that can send you into a bit of a spiral.
I think what it should send you into is like a little bit of good sense holiday. Why would you spend money you don't know where it came from?
Yeah, well,
it should
sure.
send you to good sense holiday.
Someone loves
Fine
me.
Fine for you to say that, but you just imagine how nice it feels to get extra money in your account that you didn't know about. Have you ever been credited incorrectly?
No. Not once.
You're unlucky or lucky? I don't know. I'm still making my mind.
I've never been credited money ever in any of my accounts, which is horrendous in many ways, right? However, I do know what it feels like to find that 100 rand.
Oh, that's nice.
In that jacket that you haven't worn in And now, because it's winter, we're like wearing all sorts of things we haven't worn in months.
Are you finding
stuff? And then you're like, shing, what? That 100 rand.
You're like, I'm just finding old tissues.
Well, here's some other news. Sia's boyfriend, Henry van Breda. Oh. Apparently, there is no basis for him to be granted an appeal. That is the gist of the state's argument in opposing his attempts to appeal his conviction and sentence. Remember, he's triple killer. He killed his mom, his dad, and his brother.
And attempted to kill his sister.
Yeah. Van Breda's lawyers last month approached the Constitutional Court. I mean, because of course this is a human rights issue, right? And they said they want to have his conviction and sentence overturned. He's serving 3 life terms for murdering his parents and older brother, and an additional 15 years in case he thought he would get out for attempting killing his sister. Van Breda's lawyers argued that the Western Cape High Court accepted a subpar standard of scientific evidence from the state. I mean, really, this is technical crap. There's no way he should be allowed to do this, and I'm glad that the court has said, sorry, no leave to appeal. Right?
Yeah, let's just like...
You don't even feel bad for him, and you thought he was attractive. See?
I will repeat... Take the crime away from the person.
Sia, come on.
Just with a good haircut, and if he trimmed his beard, he looks decent. I still stand by that. I'll forever stand by that.
Can you believe that?
And when I Henry,
he's like those women who write those letters to prisoners.
At least I'm not throwing my pansies at him. But Henry, you have a home in my
arms.
Early days.
You see how Sia likes him.
You have a home in my arms one day.
There's something wrong with this guy. Pumi, please, would you take him to the therapist afterwards?
I think he just needs a hug.
From right. Henry.
So there's more shit in Alex. You know, Jane, who works here with us, she lives in Alex, and she arrived here yesterday, and she said it was such a mission to get out of Alex, to come to work, to get her daughter into her creche.
Into school. Yeah,
it was a disaster. So Alexandra residents are taking legal action against Herman Mashaba after his statement that he will be rebuilding homes that were demolished last month. The protesting residents argue the structures were built illegally.
And I'll tell you that it's keeping him awake at night, because about an hour and a half ago, he was tweeting,
oh, really?
What am I being charged for? That's what shame I get.
Hour and a half ago? My goodness.
Well,
it was probably a little bit earlier than that, because when I woke up, I did wake up with Shannon at
4:30.
So, the residents of Alex are protesting that these illegal structures were built, and then they were demolished. Now Herman says he's going to rebuild them and make them safe, and now that's a problem.
No,
I need to. Someone explain this to
me. So what they're actually protesting about is there was money allocated under the Alexander Renewal Project.
Okay,
millions. Allocated right. for development, for all sorts of development within the Alexander precinct.
Cool.
And some of it has happened, not all of it. And there's an investigation currently as to
where the money went.
Where the money went and who's responsible and all of that kind of stuff. In fact, Herman Mashaba was the person that started the investigation, because that money sits in municipal coffers.
Right.
Yeah? And the big protest in Alexander is about the Alexander Renewal Project and why nothing has moved, why the dial has not moved. That's what it's about.
Uh-huh.
And always around these things, part of the bigger fight is who becomes the beneficiary. Who becomes the beneficiary of whatever renewal? So if we are building new houses, who are the people that become the beneficiaries? Mm-hmm. Is it people who have lived in Alexander, who's great-grandparents lived in Alexander? Are those the people that become the first beneficiaries, or are the people that become beneficiaries the people most at need at that time? So who most of whom I knew people, because that's the thing about shanty towns.
Sure.
pardon me.
They're mostly people who've come in from other places.
They're mostly people who've come in from other places, but also those structures keep, hence this demolition.
Yeah.
These structures
get destroyed.
Are rather new, and they've been destroyed, and those individuals will be first on the list, as it were, because now they're left without structures. And the people who've been there since, you know, the 50s, the whatever, are like, what about us? We were here first. We should be, this is... always the how long is a piece of string. So it sounds like what they are fighting about is that these structures have been demolished and now new structures are going to be put
and
there.
Who's gonna get
and who's going to get there? So it sounds like what they are fighting for is that the structures were demolished and new structures are going to be built. That's what they are fighting about. But that's not what they are fighting
about. They're fighting about who gets them.
They are fighting about the beneficiation. Yeah. Who becomes the beneficiary of this?
And of course, these are technically free houses for the people who are going to live in them.
Absolutely.
So actually, nobody has a right to claim any of it.
Yeah. No one's put
down any money or claimed the land belonged to their ancestor or anything. So there is no pre-existing claim. So you've just got to get what you get is what the government give you.
And this is always the municipality. This is always the complexity of the South African situation. Wherever you think about it, whichever township, whichever new establishment, this is always where the complexity is. The complexity is about who is most at need and
who has the best rights.
Who has the most rights, and at which point do you begin picking?
Glad it's not my problem. Good luck, Herman Mashaba. Good luck.
Just understandably now.
Here's a good story. Do you want something
yes,
positive?
Yes, please.
University of Johannesburg has seen its ratings for excellence rise by more than 50 places to rank among the best performing South African and world universities. UJ has moved up markedly by roughly 59 places into the 501 to 510 rank band worldwide. Now, I mean, are we celebrating being somewhere in the 500s?
Dude.
Is this how mediocre?
Good news?
No, hang on. I mean, I thought this was a good news story, but then when I saw it was a 501 to 510 rank, I'm like, hang on a second. Have we become so mediocre that we're celebrating 500th? If you ran the Comrades, can you tell me who came 500th? If you watched the Comrades, can you tell me who came 500th? Of course not. Nobody gives a shit. After number three, it doesn't matter anymore. And if you made it across the line just before 5:30 or whenever they chase those sad people over who don't make it over the line home, nobody cares. This is ridiculous. So UJ gets somewhere in the 500s. They're the best performing South African institution in the staff to student ratio category, climbing 32 places. Now, I do not understand why this is something that people are celebrating. If you are not in the top 100 universities, there are probably thousands of universities in the world. If you're not in the top 100, it's not worth making a noise about. This is embarrassing. This is like saying the person who, you know, is still on that road from Maritzburg to Durban is a hero. They're not.
A week after the Comrades.
Come on. Really? Have we dropped so low? Yeah, I read Prof. Jonathan Janssen's book the other day about the end of the South African university. And it is a damning... It's an assessment of how universities have changed from places of learning that have credentials that are worth something into places that are just desperately trying to accommodate everybody and that are just desperately trying to make everything okay when it isn't. They're running out of money. Government tells them what to do on one side. Students tell them what to do on the other. The academics in the middle are trying to please everybody and end up pleasing nobody. And it becomes political. So it's not really about engineering or science or maths or philosophy or any of these things. It becomes about, do you get that certificate or don't you? And how will it help you in your life? And for a lot of people, that's all university is. And I'm not saying they're wrong. But this book is quite a depressing book to read.
Is this As by Fire?
As by Fire.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's a really... You should read this book if you care about universities. And this is not a surprise now. Because I thought when I read the headline, I was like, oh, okay, look at this. South African universities on the up and up. Well, no, not really. 500th? If you're happy with that as a result, imagine your kid is in school and they come 500th. You're going to get them home and give them a participation trophy? Good for you. You want to say something, Pums?
No, so I'm thinking about it, and I'm really, really, really thinking about it. I'm wondering why it matters so much. You know, so I'm listening to you and what you're saying about Prof. Jansen and the state of the universities currently, and I'm wondering how in 2025 all of that will continue to matter. You know, I think increasingly we're living in a very globalized world.
Yeah.
And education, and we've had this conversation before, Gareth, is that education today and access to information, because of the internet, because of our devices, because of the way that we interact with each other, has been blown wide open.
Absolutely.
And places like MIT and all of those places have free courses all over the internet. Yeah. So those things, we're going to have to change the way that we think about what it is that education or formal education looks like.
I mean,
and
by the time,
gives us.
By the time your son gets to university, it will be online. It won't be a place.
I mean, considering that there are jobs today that did not exist 5 years ago.
Absolutely.
That did not exist 20 years ago. None of those universities, all thousands and thousands and thousands of them, were offering any kind of education that would have made any of those people.
So what you're saying is basically the university, the idea of a university, is becoming redundant. And I agree with you. But they, in the meantime, are charging people like a wounded buffalo to go there to get some kind of credentialism. They're promising the world. And I don't know whether they'll be able to deliver on that. And in the meantime, kids are getting into huge debt. Parents are getting into huge debt. They're trying to do anything they can to get their kids into university because they think that that's the golden, you know,
I mean,
the holy
even,
grail.
If even the Felicity Huffmans of this world.
I know, bribing.
Oh, are bribing.
This is my point. Bribing and corrupting to get ahead. I mean, this just shows you, right? There's a desperation there. And if you're going to sell that, you better be in the top 100. That's my point. If you're going to sell that dream, you best be one of the biggest, best universities in the world. You know, I'm still impressed when someone says to me that they went to Harvard or Cambridge or Oxford. And I don't know why, because I don't think they're necessarily smarter people than anyone else.
It just holds that.
But it's got
prestige.
This reputation, right? Mm. And that's what being on this list means. Like if you're 500th, that's no, there's no reputation. Just one last thing in the news. Parliament says that the State of the Nation address will cost $2 million only, which is the lowest in 5 years. Again, something worth celebrating, right? Mediocrity.
Perspective.
The president is set to deliver his third sona on Thursday. This will be the second sona this year following elections and is swearing in as the president of the republic. According to Parliament, the sona gala dinner will not take place. It says the sona budget has been slashed by 47% compared to the 2018 sona. Okay.
Yeah, I'm now more aware of not being taken by the carrot dangling in front of me. And I'm not criticizing the president or his cabinet or the powers that be, but I'm saying I'm not going to get too excited about you saying, and you know what? We are not going to have a dinner. No, but okay, let's discuss other things, Mr. President. Let's discuss other things that need to be done. But you, yeah, because it's very easy to be taken by things like this. Say like, oh my gosh, did you hear? It's the cheapest soda ever. You know, this Ramaphosa.
What a new dawn.
It really is a new dawn.
What a new dawn.
Yeah, I managed to slash off a couple of thousand rand from the sona, and
this
I'm a hero.
Just a different level
again,
of kissing
in
babies
the,
and
the
visiting
land
old
of
people.
The when we get so little good news from our government, it's not surprising to me that we will take whatever good news we can get and treat it like it's the gospel. You know, this just shows you, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed is king. Okay, let's talk about something else. Bitcoin is $9,299. Ethereum at $270.
Oh,
if people are interested in that. What? You've got something exciting to say?
Fluttering with excitement.
Pumi's jumping
that's
up
because,
and up.
That's because Gareth is the one person that I know is so like into cryptocurrencies.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, so about a couple of weeks ago, there was the initial soft announcement around
of
this.
Facebook's,
and then yesterday, they even told us what it's going to be called.
A Libra. Libra, they named it after a star sign. All right, so
I was like,
what do you think of that?
How are y'all feeling about that? Initially, I thought, oh, this is exciting. The world of cryptocurrencies is going to be like blown open because I love the concept of cryptocurrency.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Until the more I read about it and then realized that actually it's not really a cryptocurrency because it's linked to, and this is where we wish we had Anthea here, right? Because it's actually linked to a basket of currencies. So it's
yes,
not,
correct.
It's not a cryptocurrency
it's not
that
a total,
it lives.
Yeah. It's not a decentralized.
On its own. Yeah. It's linked to a basket of currencies and will always be pegged against those currencies. So if those currencies go up, it will, the value of that will go up. Right. And if they go down, the value of that will go down. But having said that, I think what it does do, considering what Facebook has been able to do in terms of breaking down a lot of borders,
mm-hmm.
is it suddenly puts a whole lot of people in play in terms of being able to access high value currencies.
Correct.
It puts them in play because if you think about Facebook Market, it's so exciting.
It's enormous. And it makes it instantly scalable, right? Because the biggest problem with these things is that they don't necessarily have enough users.
Mm.
No, it's very exciting.
I was
at the airport on Monday and I saw this new campaign by Coronation, which I thought was very clever. They've got, you know how people put these Instagram pictures up of how great their lives are? But you don't actually see, like, what they frame is just the part they want you to see. And meanwhile,
of course.
What's going on just around that is not necessarily what they're showing you.
What, and with filters in play?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Everybody's got flawless skin.
Right, seen and unseen is what they call it. So they've got a woman who, like, is dressed to the nines, and she's standing next to this horse, and she says, I'm in the paddock at the enclosure of the Durban July, but then you zoom out and you can see like she's actually just at a stable yard somewhere and
Edinanda.
Like petting someone's horse.
So
and they show these people with their beautiful garden behind them, but actually they're in a like nursery when you zoom out. And you know, they've got all these brilliant things. This woman who's doing like a headstand. But actually, when they zoom out, her friend is holding up her feet.
Oh, yeah, and they want to do their headstand and post it on social media, like hashtag namaste.
Right.
Me and my yoga. Guys, yoga, come on.
Meanwhile.
We must have that conversation one day.
So I love these ads, and it got me interested. I have met, full disclosure, I've met with the boss of marketing at Coronation.
Coronation.
And she is, I mean, she's hilarious, and she also believes, like I do, that people don't really say what they mean, the heard and unheard, like the seen and unseen.
Mm.
Like when people say to you, and we got into this conversation the other day, when people say to you, oh, we should really get together.
Mm-mm.
Ooh, Joe Bergism.
That is
the Joe Bergism of notes.
Yes.
Let's have coffee sometime.
The biggest lie in Johannesburg.
You've never, ever met anyone who said that to you that you really wanted to see or who really wanted to see you.
What's the truth
you've
behind that?
It. What happened? Okay, so the truth, let's be honest. The truth of this is when someone says to you, oh, we should really get together, what they mean is, I haven't seen you in ages. It's kind of an uncomfortable surprise that I'm seeing you now.
Yeah.
I need to say something.
I need to go now.
Yeah, let me get away from this situation. So it's exactly the opposite of what you're saying.
Mm.
And we say this. This is considered polite. It's not good. You know when people are talking to you and they go, blah, 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 blah. The truth is.
So let me be honest with you.
There we go. So
the thing is, I do say that.
What?
So
what is that? What does that mean? Does that mean that up to where you said, let me be honest with you, everything was just bollocks? You made it up?
I think in my case, it means what I'm trying to say is.
Yeah.
The summary of everything that I've just said is. The truth is.
And when you must listen, if you have any idea of what we're talking about here, you'll know that there are things that people say. And I think words really matter.
Yeah.
I think it's actually massively important that we say what we mean, because this is where communication gets derailed. And Pumi, we've spoken about this millions of times. Pumi's worked with people in HR situations and in training and in big deals and so on. And when you don't say what you mean,
you cock it all up.
Exactly. Right. It goes everywhere. Right? Because words actually have power. I mean, not to get too philosophical about this, but the Bible starts off with, in the beginning there was
the word. And the word was, come on, Sia. Preacher son, come on.
And the word was
God.
With God. And God was the word.
Now that means, I mean, if the most the most well-read, most sold book in human history.
And most stolen.
And most stolen book in human history, which tells you all other seen and unseen, starts off with this, do you actually realize the power of what you do every time you open your mouth and say something? Mm. Like, you've got to mean what you say.
So, you know, Maya Angelou, who didn't speak for many, many years, because she actually thought that her words are what had killed a man.
As a young
right?
child.
She is very famously quoted as saying, again, the thing about words, that words, you must be careful about the words that you use, not just, and the words that you allow in your home even, because they have so much power, they seep into everything. They seep into your walls, into your clothes, and into you, she says, you know, so eventually they'll seep into you, because that's, and one day we'll be able to measure the power of words. We can't right now. But there will come a time when we're able to actually measure what that weight is and that power is.
You need to
words.
Be able to back it up.
And words do that.
Maybe we'll all go quiet like Maya Angelou.
Yeah, but sure. She got quiet and then she never stopped talking when she did start.
Well, if you can think of an example, and it's not going to take you long because it didn't take us long to think of one, of what you say sometimes that you don't mean or what other people have said to you, and you can tell instantly they don't mean it either. Something I want to talk about for the next few days, and you can send us your thoughts on this. Hashtag let's be honest. And we want to talk about this and figure out what the things are that we need to stop saying. Like, let's clean up our language to the point where we actually are understood properly.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I've got one.
Go on.
I'm fine.
Yeah. And I've got to say, it's mostly...
And that one also depends on how you say it, you know? Sometimes you're like, I'm fine.
You said it with that loaded emotion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been thinking a lot about that one because I think it's like the Instagram thing. Everybody kind of says, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And they put it all out there.
Mm. Right.
But ain't
back
nobody
at the ranch,
fine.
It's not happening.
Ain't nobody fine. If we look around us, see the things that we're seeing, the things people put themselves through. I mean, what's her name? The musician that committed suicide not so long ago.
Amy Winehouse? Shame, she's been 8 years sober, by the way. Let's give her a round of applause.
I'm not.
Oh, no? No, okay.
But all of that. I mean, but people say I'm fine all the time.
Right.
And meanwhile, they're not.
Oh, don't worry, Spoon. Let's just have this conversation over coffee.
So if you want to join in this conversation, you can join us by letting us know what your pet peeve is when people say things that they don't mean. And just hashtag it.
What's that hashtag?
Let's be honest. All right? See if you can add that into your feed today, whether it's on Twitter or Instagram or anywhere else. And we'll add it to our little list because I'm going to compile a list and we're going to stop using the words that we don't actually mean.
Yeah.
Stop saying things that we don't really mean to say. All right, all
this,
of that
this
is part...
This is a public service announcement.
Yeah, it's all part of life. It's also a large part of investing. If you're looking to invest your money long-term, choose the people who believe in trust above everything else. Ask your financial advisor about Coronation because I saw their ads. That's what triggered this whole discussion. And if you want to join in on it, let's be honest is the hashtag. And we're going to talk about this over the next couple of days.
The Money Magnet Seminar with successful multimillionaire Chad Engel is coming to Joburg.
So that Chad can continue being a multimillionaire with your help.
Learn Chad's Money Magnet secrets to attract wealth.
Secrets like attracting money with pricey seminar tickets and a 6-book series.
It's difficult to trust nowadays. At Coronation, we believe that without honesty, there can be no trust. That's why when it comes to investing your money, we take everything into account. The seen and unseen. Ask your financial advisor about Coronation or visit our website for more information. Coronation. Trust is earned. Coronation is an authorized FSP.
If you're a critical thinker and you want to hear intelligent debate about important issues, then our new series, which is called The Interchange, is just for you. In association with ABSA and Tsimong, The Interchange calls on some of the best university debaters to debate critical and controversial issues in South Africa and Africa as a whole. Now, I'm very excited about this, Pums, because so often we hear people paying lip service to young people in South Africa saying, oh, well, I speak on behalf of the young, and there's some 70-year-old politician up there talking about what young people want. And actually, we don't get to hear young people. They're not as well represented in the media as we would like. Twitter, we know you can't trust because Twitter's just a, you know, quagmire. You can't go onto most social media without getting into an argument with someone. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between a debate and an argument. And I'm really proud of we're going to get them in here next week, of Tami and Busi and the rest of the guys from Tsimong, because what they've done is they've put together the best debaters. They deal with these guys all the time from all over the country. These are university-level debating champions. They've won international competitions, and they really are smart as can be. These conversations are intellectual. They introduce an incredible amount of nuance on issues that often are relegated to black and white on the internet. You can listen to episode 1 of The Interchange today at 9 a.m., or you can get the podcasts on cliffcentral.com, on our app, or wherever you get your podcasts. But I'm excited about this.
Nice. Mm.
Yeah, very cool. We recorded the first one at ABSA because they have the courage.
Yeah.
You know, the courage to sponsor this. A lot of people run away from controversial
conversations.
Issues. No matter how relevant they are, they're scared of the controversy, but they desperately want the relevance. Now, what's beautiful about this is that ABSA said, you know what? We're going to throw this open. Let the young people who have these ideas debate. And remember, in a debate, that isn't necessarily your personal point of view. You are tasked with giving the best argument for that point of view, even if it isn't yours, which is something that we unfortunately, a skill we sorely lack in this country.
Did you say?
Because we all get like caught up in what we believe, and I do it all the time, so I know I'm as guilty as anyone, instead of trying to look at it from the other side, which is precisely where the word respect comes from. So we talked earlier about meaning what you say. Respect, re, means again, and spec is to look. So you look at it from the other side. That's what respect is. Some people go, you didn't give me no respect. What they mean is, like, you need to look at it from my side.
That's not what Cicero taught us.
No. But it is that. That is where it comes from. So if you want to get involved in this, it's a great show. There are two really, really smart shows going on at the moment on cliffcentral.com. The other one is Let's Start an Argument, which is also really, really interesting. If you want some food for your brain, if you feel like improving your mind like you would go to the gym to improve your body, this is a great place to start. Mm-hmm. It is time for Said by Sia, and then we're going to get into the burning platform this morning. We're going to be joined by Pumi, and we're going to have one or two experts join us as well about issues like the ANC electing Zuma-era ministers as the chairs of parliamentary portfolio committees. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. But as I said, first, Said by Sia, and then the burning platform. Brought to you by Nando. See ya, take it away.
So I'm just bringing up the story this morning because it conjured up such a sweet picture in my head. Scientists are using music to help build the brains of premature babies.
What?
So imagine just scientists doting over kids and being able to play music over them. I just think that's so awesome. These researchers in Switzerland have discovered that certain music helps strengthen brain development in premature babies. So babies born very prematurely are at high risk of developing neuropsychological disorders. So these researchers at the University of Geneva and University Hospitals of Geneva, I like that their acronym is HUG, H-U-G, University Hospitals of Geneva, they propose this unique solution, music written especially for these children. And they've done the research behind this, and they found out that actually music shows that the neural networks of premature infants who have listened to this music, and in particular a network involved in many sensory and cognitive functions, are developing much better. So these researchers got a specific composer to work with them as well, and they created this music for all of these fragile children.
But what, hang on, what kind of music are they listening to?
Well, they had a composer by the name of Andreas Vollenweider,
Now we've got a German in the studio. Don't mess around.
Schnitzel.
He's also a well-known composer.
And he was part of this research, and he showed great interest in creating music that was suitable for premature children. So to choose the instruments that were suitable for these premature babies, Andreas played many kinds of instruments to the children. So part of the research process, interestingly enough, they found that the Indian snake charmer's flute was what actually worked. So very agitated children calmed down instantly, and their attention was drawn to the music. So the researchers found that without music, premature babies generally had poorer functional connectivity between brain areas than full-term babies, confirming the negative effects of prematurity. So the first children enrolled in the study are now 6 years old, at an age which cognitive problems begin to be detectable. So this is why they're now able to also speak about this. So scientists will now meet again their young patients to conduct a full cognitive and socio-emotional assessment and observe whether the positive outcomes measured in their first weeks of life have been sustained. So scientists have been hard at work at HUG, making sure that babies are listening to music, and hey, now it's discovered that actually makes a difference. I think this is so awesome.
Very nice.
And I'd love to be a fly on the wall in these labs and hospitals to see what exactly happens. I'm just picturing these scientists with tiny little headphones on the babies over and over and over again.
I don't think it's tiny little headphones. I think it's like speakers in the...
This movie don't ruin my vision. I think it's so cute.
Tiny little headphones. Although, what I do take out from this, I've always wondered about that snake charmer music. If it's the snake charmer's swaying head that charms the snake, or if it is indeed the music.
The musical notes, isn't it?
Based on what you're saying, it's the flute.
Well, well, well. We learn something new every day.
Okay, when we come back, we've got lots to get through in the Burning Platform. We're going to be joined by, as I said, Pumi and Sam Nkokeli, who will be joining us to talk about, among other things, who is winning the Battle of the Bulls, Cyril or Ace? Who is the big winner there? Because clearly, there are a lot of people who've been put in charge of the parliamentary portfolio committees who are not Cyril people. So what does this mean? We will find out. All right, so much more to come. CliffCentral.com. I hope you're ready for an excellent morning. Stick around. We have a lot to keep you amused, entertained, enthralled, empowered, inspired, and all the other stuff too. We don't mess around. Right, Pumi?
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop. Is that the official sound of this morning? Whoop, whoop.
That's my official sound our morning.
All right. Very good.
Joy and excitement.
We'll take it. And don't forget to check out The Interchange. It's a brand new series that kicks off today at 9 o'clock. Very, very excited about that. And I hope you will be too. It's very good. All right.
This is CliffCentral.com.